It's just coming up for 8 minutes after 8 o'clock. Now, Finance Minister Tito Mboweni delivered the 2019 budget speech today. This was his first national speech since taking over from former Minister Malusi Gigaba. He delivered the tough speech amid South Africa's dire economic situation. He revealed that the government will give Eskom a total of 69 billion rand, but will not take on 100 billion rand of its debt as requested by the struggling utility. Some have argued that the budget came with no real surprises or shocks, given the pressure cooker that the state finances is in, especially those of struggling power utility Eskom. Tonight, we want to focus on whether this is a stabilization budget or a budget that's designed to grow our economy. We also get to reflect on the state of SOEs. And of course, the Minister of Finance was very frank about whether we need all of the SOEs, and if we do need them, whether they operate in the same way, and whether we shouldn't open our ears and our eyes and our minds to different ways of dealing with the matter. Joining us now for this discussion is Mr. Dondo Mohajani, the National Treasurer Director General in the Treasury. Mr. Mohajani, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Karima, and thank you very much for having me on your show.
Now, I know that you are a very busy man and you were kind enough to step out of a dinner, so I'm going to try and not keep you long. In conclusion, the president, the minister said today that he is taking tough steps to fix the fiscal position and state-owned enterprises. He spoke about the fact that because the children are our future, most of our spending are going to education and will strengthen early childhood development and support higher education. And then he also said on the land, we have set aside money to help our people buy their own houses, support land reform and transfer title deeds. And on electricity, he says we face very tough choices on Eskom. And then lastly, he said we are reprioritizing resources towards the President's Infrastructure Fund and away from the wage bill. Now, of course, those are in some ways very accurately summing up what this budget is about. But there's some contradictions in there, DG. The first thing is generally what the Treasury talks about is fiscal consolidation. But a lot of people said today that the budget wasn't about that, that it was just about trying to stabilize the situation, buy us some cover to build institutions that will get us our revenue back and begin to get our growth projections up. Your take on those who say we are inevitably heading for a downgrade?
Karima, I disagree with those because I think we are in a tough situation and tough environment. And the worst thing is when we don't do anything about it, then in that way we'll be reckless, and that will be clearly a sign that we are not able to manage our finances, and then the downgrade will be possible. So I don't think it's correct, because we are doing something. It's a very difficult balancing act,
yes,
that we had to make today, balancing what's the available,
mm-hmm,
and based on what the need is. Unfortunately, what's available is not the same as what we need. So as a result, we have to do that balancing act.
Now, of course, the state has less money. The government will collect about 42.8 billion less in tax revenue than estimated in the last year's budget. This is equivalent of receiving 5% less on your paycheck every month, but still having to pay for your bills, which are increasing each year. This is partly due to a weaker economy, resulting in lower corporate tax and fewer bonuses paid to individual taxpayers. And then, of course, the debt crisis in numbers. This year, the government will spend 243 billion rand more than it earns. This will require it to borrow 1.2 billion a day, assuming, as the minister say, we don't borrow over weekends. How are we going to manage this tightrope? We know that we are spending and living above our means. We've got to service our debt, but we've also got to get our institutions ready so that we can get future-proof again, so that we can get to that plumb stage that the minister used to talk about during the state of Finance Minister Trevor Manuel. How are we going to do that exactly? Because it's such a tightrope. It's such a balancing act. It's going to require mature leadership across the board. Does the finance minister have the backing of cabinet and, more important, the governing party to do this?
Karima, I was with the Minister of Finance in cabinet on a few occasions. The last occasion was this morning when he was taking cabinet through what he's going to be talking about. Mm. There is one, I think, great support from cabinet. There's great support. He did mention in the House today that the president has been behind the budget. The president has been assisting us.
Yes.
So I think it's important. We've got some issues on growth that we had to deal with. From the medium-term budget point statement, if you remember, we said there are constraints to the economy. There are some low-hanging fruit. And we know the good story is when there's growth, because even though when there's growth, there'll be revenues to spend, and some obviously will collect more. So one key thing that is important is that we have to ensure that we remove the constraints that are there in the economy. We have to ensure that those growth-enhancing measures are accelerated, the visa regime is dealt with, get more tourists in South Africa, sort out the spectrum, sort the mining. All of those things that you mentioned before are starting to bear fruit.
Yeah.
We are in the right direction.
Now,
secondly, our spending. Our spending should be focused on the spending that has got potential to generate economic activity in order to create jobs and address the levels of poverty that are there.
Mm.
And I think if we focus, and then you spoke about infrastructure spend and infrastructure budgets that have been allocated. If we do those things and stop spending money on consumables and only productive sectors of the economy are enhanced, in that way, growth will come our way.
Now, one of the things, of course, that you're also talking about is the way in which you're going to approach state-owned enterprises. The minister was very bold. And again, you said that the minister took cabinet through this, so presumably there's support for this. You said that you basically gave Eskom a 3-year opportunity to get on its feet, but you're not going to take on its 100 billion rand debt. You are speaking about putting together what people are calling CROs, which is, of course, going to be a watchdog in some ways to see when people are overspending and to watch those guarantees. When exactly is that going to happen? How is it going to be enacted? And to who is that CRO going to be reporting?
The minister did indicate that in the next few weeks to be announcing that. You remember, Karima, we gave Eskom, it was a debt, a 60 billion rand, call it an injection, it was a balance sheet, issue addressing the balance sheet. We had to change our debt into equity some years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
After that, we took 23 billion rand from the same Vodacom shares and we gave Eskom.
Mm.
There's not much that you can point and look at in terms of where that money went and what it did. Now we learned the hard lessons. Now we are giving Eskom 23 billion rand for the next 10 years. And now it's critical that we don't look the other way.
Mm.
And that's why a chief reconfiguration officer will be installed, not only in Eskom, by the way.
Yes.
In all state-owned companies that need our support. We give you money as a state-owned company. We need to ensure that we follow the money. We need to ensure that we have our eyes and ears on the ground. Now, we all know that there will be boards of these entities. There will be CEOs and CROs. I mean, CFOs. It's however important that we develop a mechanism. It has never happened in our case, especially in state-owned companies. In the private sector, it's normal.
Mm.
When Investec or any bank or APSA or any bank gives and there are doubt of the story of a company, they'll put a chief restructuring officer in place.
No, for sure. I mean, they'll put a curator there. What I want to know, DG, is who is that CRO, that chief reorganization officer, going to report to? Let's say, for example, the person is in Eskom or in the SABC. Is that person going to report to the minister responsible for that? Because these individuals are meant to be independent. The lessons that we learned from the last 9 years is that it is, in fact, our executive in many instances tied to former President Jacob Zuma that forced public servants to do illegal things and to, of course, spend money which they don't have. How are we going to ensure that these CROs are independent, and who are they going to be accounting to?
Look, I think it's important. First, the clear accountability arrangement must be clear that it is a shareholder, which in this case is government, that has to put the CRO in place. And that person will definitely be accountable to the shareholder department.
Mm-hmm.
However, we must understand that they will be there to ensure that a plan, a credible plan that has been put together by the entity, is executed.
Yes.
And accountability is how we put the accountability mechanisms in place that will ensure that we don't do things that essentially will be counterproductive,
yeah,
as the CROs will be. So it is important that we get credible people whose integrity cannot be questioned, people who've got experience and know-how in terms of whatever they will be putting them on.
Mm.
So clearly, we'll be doing for the first time, we'll ensure that we actually consult as much wide as possible in terms of the roles. And structure is going to be, we have to test all options that we have. And I think this is one of those things, as a young democracy as we'll be testing this thing out, and we hope it should bear us fruit. And I think we shouldn't be doubting ourselves that we want to be putting something like this in place for the first time instead of in companies and doubt what it will achieve. But so long as we put the fundamentals in place of accountability and reporting and ensuring that they actually ensure that the corporate plan of that particular entity is implemented.
Absolutely. It's 19 minutes after 8 o'clock. I'm in conversation with the National Treasury Director, Dondo Mokgatjani. We're speaking about the maiden budget speech delivered by Tito Mboweni, the finance minister, today. And we're speaking about the accountability mechanisms that the minister announced, particularly in terms of state-owned entities. Now, on the issue of education, we see that the major tranche is still going to education. There's nothing new about this. The monies are going to infrastructure, things like pit latrines and so on. But we also have the State of the Nation address. If we look at how the president positioned education, he positioned education within this fourth industrial revolution, and almost said that we need to use it as a way to leapfrog some of the backlogs that we have with technology. How is the education spend going to be used to do precisely that? I see you talking about and science grant, for example. How is that going to be administered? Is it going to go to higher education? Is it going to go to basic education? What exactly is going to happen in this instance?
Sarima, we're spending 386 billion rand in learning and culture programs across the whole of government. In simple language, of the 1.8 trillion, 386 billion of that is towards higher education. Basic,
yes,
education is taking the chunk of 250 billion.
Yes.
We will continue investing in basic education.
You know, I know that this is the case because this is not new. You've always invested in education. The question that we were always asking is whether we're getting bang for our buck. Are we getting value out of what you are investing in? How are you going to, for example, make sure that the critique that is there against the way in which education is bureaucratized? For example, some people say that SATU has a hold over how principals are appointed at schools. And we know that if leadership at schools are not solid, then schools don't perform, whether they are rich or poor. We're talking about the training of teachers themselves, particularly also people who train at TVET colleges. We're talking about free education at a tertiary level. How are you going to ensure that the monies are spent in ways that we get value out of it, that it yields the kind of projected results that you are aiming for?
Karima, I think you hit the nail on the head that we have not actually been ensuring that spending is according to plan. We need a conversation. Let me be blunt and honest, that it's high time that we have to really have a conversation in South Africans asking the role of civil society and how exactly things are being done.
Yes.
And you are saying SATU, for instance, it's important that SATU, because it's SATU members who are teachers.
Mm.
It's teachers who are teaching our children in schools. And it's important that, firstly, the discipline of teaching gets back into motion.
Mm.
And the conversation that I was talking about, when I say you should be blunt, that we should get into the room with unions, civil society, government, business, and say, are we doing things the right way? if the way they're delivering education the right way. If not, then we must come up with ways that we can ensure that education is delivered. Because the key issue for me is with education, teachers must be in the classroom. Teachers must be able to ensure that the kids improve their math and learning and culture. I mean, math and science, we are lacking as a country.
Yes.
The second deep conversation is that at what point do we engage labor in terms of rolling out education and finalizing curricula and the role of parents?
Absolutely. I mean, the minister said today that parents should actually be doing homework with children. But of course, that is assuming that parents, A, have jobs and education, and two, have the time or are at home when their children are doing their homework. Most of our parents aren't home, and some of them are unemployed and can't read and write. So we're essentially talking about a middle-class solution. We're not necessarily talking about all the in South Africa. But I want us to take a listen to the clip about the fact that SARS will be fixed, because this is, of course, the main way in which you'd redistribute money to provide services and goods for South Africans.
South African Revenue Service is being fixed. My thanks go to Judge Nugent and his panel for his wise counsel. Based on the recommendations of the panel, we do the following. First, a new commissioner for SARS will be appointed in the coming weeks. Secondly, a new illicit economy unit launched in August 2018 will fight the trade in illicit cigarettes and tobacco. I'm sure you saw what they did yesterday somewhere. Three, the large business unit was a major source of tax collection, and its skill was well known and renowned. Unfortunately, over the past couple of years, this capacity has been undermined. This unit will be reintroduced and will be formally launched in early April. Four, SARS is strengthening its IT team and its IT systems, as this is crucial for our tax collection efforts. Five, information sharing agreements with allies internationally will help fight against cross-border tax evasion schemes, which are all over the place.
I'm sure, DG, that Helen Ziller will be very disappointed, because she, of course, is planning a tax revolt. And here the minister is telling us how SARS is actually getting its act together. Now, a lot of people are talking about this unit of SARS. And I spoke to the acting commissioner last night about this and the raid on Mr. Mazzotti's home, for example. Some people are saying the rogue unit is back. From the Treasury's perspective, how important is this unit in SARS, and what is it going to be able to yield to the fiscus so that you are able to, deliver goods and services to people?
Karima, let me start by saying a weakened SARS is not good for our democracy. You need a strong SARS, a SARS that's able to collect taxes, that's able to actually make sure that the money that we spend as a treasury or that we allocate is enough for South Africa's democracy to be enhanced. Therefore, it's very important. I have lots of engagements with my counterparts everywhere in the world, especially my counterparts in emerging economies and in some G20 countries, the US, etc. A strong revenue collection service is good for these countries, and it as well should be good for South Africa. We saw what's possible if SARS collects. Because in the plan years that we are referring to, the Trevor Manuel years, those years, we had an enhanced SARS which was collecting. Every cent was being collected. Now, we saw in the last few years, apart from the global challenge, economy challenges that we saw, the reasons that have been attributed to low collection was the administrative capacity at SARS to collect, and the impact of which we see all the time and every day. And it's for that reason that I think Minister outlined those units in SARS that will be formed back, and what the acting commissioner was saying, that we're going to see lots of these, because there's lots of loopholes and leakages that have emerged in the last few years in the revenue, in the collection of taxes. And I think we welcome that. We welcome that because we will be able to actually spend on programs, social upliftment programs that takes people out of poverty and create the necessary jobs. So a weakened stance is not good for South Africa and for our democracy.
Now, finally, Mr. Mokgajane, the issue of the wage bill is a very testy issue. And I saw that Minister Mboweni nodded to Ms. Ayanda Dlodlo, who is the Minister for Public Administration, talking about the wage bill that needs to be adjusted. And of course, that ultimately means wage or rather job losses. And no one wants job losses in this moment. Let's take a quick listen to the Minister talking about the public wage bill adjustment.
The public sector wage bill is unsustainable. We must shift expenditure to investment. National and provincial compensation budgets will be reduced by 27 billion rand over the next 3 years.
Now, of course, that is unequivocal. How is the Treasury going to engage in this matter? I spoke with Bekin Charlin Charlie, the General Secretary of COSATU, last night because he was part of the delegation that met with the President and the committee around ESCOM and unbundling. And of course, the unions are listening to government and saying that they hear what government is saying, but they, of course, have to fight for their members. They have to fight for jobs. We can't, in a double-digit unemployment setup, have more job losses. But how are we going to adjust this public wage bill without a job bloodbath, a job loss bloodbath?
Arima, let me explain. Let me put this 27 billion rand in context so that you understand, and South Africans must understand this. Over the numbers, over the last few years, there has been, let's for argument say we budgeted 1,000 rand for wages, 1,000 rand per year for 3 years. What we've seen happening, and we've gone deeper into checking exactly what's happening, found that 1,000 rand has been reducing, all because in some cases of natural attrition and other factors that are there. Provinces, for instance, collectively have been reducing, employing less, more people over the years. But remember what happened. The 1,000 rand in year two and year three is still there. And yet you are spending 900 rand in year one.
Mm.
So what basically we did this time around was to say, instead of budgeting 1,000 rand of a trend of personnel which is reducing, let's rather reduce the budget for the outer years by 100 rand so that if an average then becomes 900 rand instead of 1,000 rand.
Mm.
So this 27 billion rand is exactly that. First, we had to correct that because the trend, personal trends in numbers have been declining already through natural attrition and other means. So as a result, or through, by the way, slower placing of people.
Mm.
So it's a saving to think about it that we are reducing. But we want to reduce further that because our wage bill is very high. That's why Minister Dlodlo has been engaging with her. We are going to ask those, for instance, those who are prepared and who we are not going to force anybody. Those that are almost want to take early retirement, they must come forward, and a circular will be issued maybe tomorrow or something. Those who are who want to avail themselves.
Wait, what age does one have to be for early retirement? What is official age, and what from when can you start? 60 years. So what is early retirement?
So it will be between 55 and 59.
Okay. How many civil servants fit into that category? Do you have a number?
130,000 public servants across the whole of the state, including provinces, fit into that category. Now, we are saying we have for instance indicated that in the numbers that are here now, 16,000 could qualify for that, and then those that are available must come on, and the challenge is going to be if more people come, obviously we'll have to make more resources available because we want to reduce the level.
Mm.
It's unsustainable by any means, and it should be understood in that context that we are not forcing people to go. 130,000 people, if they want to come forward, they can obviously be exited from the system Because when younger people come on, it becomes a bit cheaper because of the kind of where they start in terms of their ranks and the salary levels, etc.
But here's the conundrum, DG, and this is my absolute last question because I know you must go. I know that this is a good way to exit people out and to save money. And when you hire younger people, you hire people at lesser salaries. But in the case of Eskom, for example, you have plants that are 37 years old. You need people with institutional memory to come back. So you are exiting your institutional memory because it's going to save you money, but it's not going to help you fix your state-owned companies. And you're going to bring younger people in who have no idea how the system works. So aren't these things jumping up against each other?
It's not always the case. I gave some economists I engaged with during the day today asked the same question. And I took the treasurer as an example. I said, we've got DDGs in the treasurer who are in that age category. But it's how the institution has been orientated, how the institution is structured. And obviously your career planning becomes an issue. Are you going to accept those? Are you going to request those that clearly have got experience to actually, you know, exiting this year, they must give us another year or two. It's all about negotiations. We don't want to do this at the detriment of the state and the capacity of the state to deliver. And I hope in Eskom, I don't know, Eskom obviously will have to interact with their own operational restructuring in that way, and then we'll be awaiting. But I think it will be naive of us to really experienced people in a way that is detriment and the departments.
So it shouldn't be an irrational process?
It shouldn't be. It should be. We should engage properly with the unions. We should engage properly with staff and negotiate with staff. Whilst obviously we've got an accelerated career planning, accelerated skills development program. We do that in the treasury all the time, and I think it's important that we share experience in the whole of the state because there are those that are doing it very well and there are those that obviously need to be assisted along the way. And I hope DPSA is going to give us guidance in this regard.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Dondo Mohajani, the Treasurer General, Director General in the National Treasury, speaking to us, of course, on the maiden budget of Finance Minister Tito Mboweni. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're talking to you about former President Jacob Zuma, who believes that the NPA has a vendetta against him.